Welcome to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Join Jaguars General Manager Gene Smith and your host Cole Pepper as they break down the last Jaguars game and look at the next time the Jaguars take the field. We'll also take a dip inside the Gene Pool to see what makes a player stand out at his position. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith is brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Barbecue, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith begins right now.
And we welcome you in here this day after Christmas. Happy Boxing Day to you. You celebrate, maybe if you're British or Canadian, celebrating the day after Christmas and the penultimate show of the season for us here, Jaguars Monday. We'll have one more a week from today. And coming off a disappointing 23-17 loss to the Titans in Nashville, looking forward to the Jaguars contest against the Colts coming up on Sunday here, New Year's Day at Everbank Field. How was your Christmas?
Well, Christmas was good. I had quality time with my wife and my two daughters. Obviously, it would have been a better one had we been able to come away with the win up in Nashville. But you got to give the Titans credit. We did not make enough plays to win the game, and let's see what we can do this weekend with a home divisional game against the Colts.
And we'll talk a little bit about that game as well, but kind of want to step back a bit as we're now a couple of days removed, the Saturday game to the Monday show. Won't be quite as much digging into it, but do want to point out a couple of things that happened in that game and look forward. For starters, Maurice Jones-Drew, again. I mean, I just leave him, you know, I make a little outline for the show every week, and I just put positives, Maurice Jones-Drew, and I don't change it every week. It's just every week. Same. He's been between 80 and 122 yards, I think, every single game this year. 103 on Saturday. He leads the National Football League with 1,437 yards, and he's within 135 of Fred Taylor's single-season team record. He's had quite a year.
He really has, and, you know, he's been relatively healthy until down the stretch. He's had the ankle that's been a little bit of a problem. He's continued to play through that. I mean, he's obviously a top competitor, and I know his teammates want him to get the rushing title, and you know, I'm so happy for him because of what he went through a year ago, and he came back this year and really has put together a tremendous season.
Well, you think about the opportunities, the times that you could have said, you know, you'd go back to the year he was drafted. Here's a guy, a little undersized, height-wise anyway, and a guy who kind of shared a lot of time at UCLA. And I remember asking in the post-pick press conference, I asked Jack about this. I said, I looked at his great return numbers. He said, is he worth a second-round pick if he's just a return guy? And the answer was, he's a running back.
No question. A lot of people say, you know, he's short. Well, he might be short, but he's not small. I mean, you look at him, you look at Ray Rice, two feature backs in the NFL. They run, obviously, very low to the ground, but a lot of power in their legs. And when they drop their shoulder, I mean, it's tough to get a good hit on them. And when you look at him, too, just like I've said before with Greg Jones, when they – get the ball in their hand, they become like linebackers. They're initiating contact on people.
A couple examples of that on Saturday in Nashville as well. Another of the things really caught my eye in that game, the late in the first quarter, the drive that Gabbert, 5 of 5 on the drive for 68 yards. It led to Maurice's 67th career rushing touchdown, which ties Fred Taylor for career rushing touchdowns as a Jaguar. But Gabbert on that drive, I mean, you talk about looking for a flash, and you couldn't get much of a better flash than that. On that drive, he was in command, he was in control, making big plays. 4 of his 5 completions went for first downs, moved him down the field, and Maurice got the touchdown.
Well, he got in a groove, and I think as you look throughout the game, there were other opportunities where we could have sustained some drives. And again, it does start with the quarterback, but it ends with catching the ball. And we had some key drops in the football game that, you know, has been the story really to the season. And that's something we will get corrected. we got to have more consistency catching, and certainly the quarterback play will improve as Blaine continues to grow and things function better around him.
Defense made some plays as well, forced three turnovers. Jeremy Mincy had an interception. Morgan Trent, who, again, a lot of Jaguars fans probably scrambling for a roster, who's this guy, comes away with an interception. Then C.J. Mosley forces the fumble, and DeJuan Landry recovers, plus really limited Chris Johnson to next to nothing in the ball game. Despite giving up some yardage in the passing game, we'll talk about that here in just a moment, defense still ranked fifth in the National Football League heading into the final week of the season.
They're still playing very hard, and Kwasi and DeJuan, both in the run game, did an excellent job of coming up into the box and playing with good run fits. We held them to 2.6 per rush. I know in the second half they tried to get the ball to Chris Johnson some and see if they could get something going. Obviously they came into the game trying to throw the football and taking advantage of where we've had some injuries in our secondary. I thought the other positive was on third down we held them to 25%. Yep. And it was unfortunate. We had two third and short situations where we had neutral zone infractions, which gave them first downs. Got to better have better discipline, really, on third down to get ourselves off the field.
And let's talk about Gabbert overall. How do you assess his game? 50% in terms of completion percentage. I guess had the high of that really terrific drive. Had some drops. I think there were three drops in the game. You probably count plus or minus, depending on how difficult you want to grade. And he still has not put together four quarters of high-level play. Sometimes rookies don't do that. Sometimes you need some help to do it. But what has to happen for him to take that next step?
Well, hopefully another good week of practice and we see four quarters in our final game, Cole. I'd agree with you. He can play with more consistency throughout an entire game. The one thing you saw in this particular game is the ability to make all the throws. He had three opportunities where we were coming off play action. Actually, two were play action. One, he was stepping up in the pocket, then he eluded the rush to the right. So it would be three times when he was on the run to his right, and he threw with tremendous velocity and accuracy.
Boy, the one to Dillard on the sideline there was, that's an all-pro kind of throw. And now, so there's no real, I think we're to the point where if anybody has been paying attention to what Gabbert's doing, there's not a question about can he do it, it's now can he do it every time? Can he do it consistently? Can he develop that kind of flow, and can he do it when things break down?
I agree with you, and I think that's part of the growth that needs to continue. I don't feel that throughout the season that the stress that's been placed on him is a bad thing. I think it's a good thing. I think it'll bode well in the future because he's certainly had some trying times throughout the season, and he's hung in there, and he's taken some shots, and he's certainly played through some things. But all this is part of you know, maturing as a quarterback in the NFL.
And I will say this from a media guy standpoint. He has not seemed rattled at any time dealing with the media. He's not looked like he had a deer in the headlights look in the locker room at all. Again, you like that out of a 22-year-old. All right, we have more coming up here on Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. We'll talk a little bit more about the quarterback. Also, boy, did Jared Cook have a big game. We'll also look ahead to what's happening on Sunday as the Jaguars take on the Indianapolis Colts, final game of the season for both teams. Also a chance for you to win an autographed football, the official game football of the Jaguars, autographed by the GM and the Scout's Eye Unsung Player. Just tweet your guess for the unsung player. Got some good candidates this week, I think. Three or four guys who all deserve some consideration. You can also join the conversation. You can tweet to me at Cole Pepper or on Facebook, facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguar. Season ticket holders get paid at the pump when you buy 10 gallons or more of Gate gasoline. Show your Jaguars rewards card and receipt to the cashier for your coupon worth $2 in Jag Bucks, redeemable for game day concessions and merchandise. Back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. Jeremy.
This
First and goal at the 10. Flaherty in motion. Three receivers for Gabbert. He'll take the snap, hand it off. Maurice is right up the middle. There he goes. Maurice makes a man miss. Reaches for the end zone. Touchdown, Jacksonville.
Boy, did they need that.
There was the touchdown by Maurice Drew. 62nd of his career, tying Fred Taylor's Jaguars rushing touchdown in a career record. A lot of records falling for Maurice this year. New Year's Day game, Jaguars-Colts Fan Appreciation Day, and your chance to show your appreciation to the Weavers. Come out to say goodbye. Fans will be encouraged to sign a 20-foot banner that will be on display in the Pepsi Plaza from 10 until noon while we're out there doing the tailgate show. You can also create your own banner showing your appreciation and bring them to the game for tickets to the game. Call 633-2000 or visit jaguars.com. All right, coming up, we'll unveil the Scouts Eye Unsung Player in just a bit. But right now, time for an injury update brought to you by Baptist Health, Jacksonville Circle of Care. Two more guys on the injured reserve list. Ashton Yabody and Matt Roth, both placed on IR. Now, 31 players have been sent to the IR so far this year for the Jaguars. Other injuries to get you updated on, Kevin Rutland with an ankle. Mike Thomas did come back last week from the concussion, played a bit. Cecil Shorts with that hamstring did not play. Guy Wimper with the knee. We'll see how that plays comes around. Cameron Bradfield has had a chance to get some good playing time. Dwight Lowry continues to be day-to-day with the shoulder. And Mel Tucker mentioned today that Aaron Campman had a little cleanup procedure on the knee. And with the kind of surgery time he's been spending the last couple of years, we'll see if Campman can come back again and be the kind of player he was before the injury for next season. We welcome you back, Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith here on a Monday after Christmas. We're getting a lot of good questions and comments coming in now on Twitter. Again, you can tweet to me at Cole Pepper. Here's a question for you, Gene. Who has surprised or impressed you the most among the new players who have been recently thrust into the starting lineup?
Well, Cam Bradfield is certainly in the two games that he started. He's been respectable. He had a couple moments in the game where he was certainly stressed, where he got beat inside and he showed the ability to recover. He's one that's an every down starter. And then I think, you know, Colin Clardy down the stretch here, he has come in more of a role player situation, and he's done a good job as a receiving tight end and on special teams.
Where'd you get him? How'd you come across him?
Well, he was on the street, and certainly we were looking for a run-catch type tight end after Zach Miller got hurt, and we looked at a couple different guys, and he hung around, and it was an opportunity where he initially started on the practice squad, and we were able to elevate him, and he's taken advantage of the opportunity.
You don't find a lot of Ivy League guys, but I guess that usually can be an advantage for picking up an offense fast. If you've had to study in the Ivy League, you figure you could probably pick up an offense pretty quickly.
No question.
And special teams, special teams roles he's had to play.
He is a guy that can legitimately run. I mean, he ran mid to high 4.5s coming out, and I think his best football is in front of him. He's been a couple different situations, and some of it is just getting into the right situation. And I think clearly in practice, and you saw a couple times in the game, Blaine does have trust that he knows that Colin will be in the right spot.
You alluded to it a little bit earlier. The drops were an issue and have been throughout the year. Do you need an off season to correct it, whether it's personnel, coaching, whatever else? Do you need to have an off? I mean, it's, I don't think you can solve it, can you, in a week with one game to go?
Well, I'm not sure you can. Obviously, you have to get players that can consistently catch the ball at this level, especially when you get an opportunity to get two hands on it. This is the NFL. And I know Mike Shepard has done a good job of clearly the details of the routes are improved. And so down the stretch here, I mean, it's about when you get open, catch the ball. And I've said that a number of times this year, and I think it's, you know, obvious to any fan that's watching the games on Sunday.
Yeah, I want your reflection on the interception that Gabbert threw down near the goal line. My comment after the game was it was fourth down. There was nobody open. He just, you know, it was one of those things where it's fourth down, might as well try to whip it in and help for one of those miracle plays. And people say, well, here's another example of a rookie throwing an interception near the end zone. I didn't really see it as one of those things. That was one of those, well, hey, nobody's open. Let me just, you know, fire it in there and hope something good happens.
Well, fourth and two, and we went with an aggressive play. I thought it was a good call on Dirk's part. Obviously, it was good defense on their part. We had two options, Dillard and Colin Clardy. Both were covered well. You can't throw the ball away. He threw it, tried to get a pass interference call. Didn't happen.
Yeah, you throw it away, it's as good as an interception, as good as a turnover.
Right. So, you know, in that situation, they had a good defensive play. Bottom line, cut and dry.
By the way, all of our social media questions brought to you by our good friends at CopyFax. Gene, Caleb wants to know, what do you look for when it comes to covering a tight end?
Well, there's a couple things you can do. Obviously, their tight end, number 89, certainly did a tremendous job on our defense. And people don't realize that he's actually a big receiver.
Yeah, talk about a guy who can run. Boy.
He ran in the mid to high 4.4s coming out of South Carolina. And he had 9 catches the week before. He's a guy that really was underutilized. And I think the NFL you know, is a league that has evolved into everybody trying to have a guy like that. Like Zach Miller is a low 4.45 guy, and he's 6'4". And obviously when you have a guy like that that can be a weapon, you try to create mismatches. And he got into some situations where he was probably faster, you know, on the one with Paz. Mm-hmm. Paz is in good position running with the guy vertically down the field. And that's a 4.4 guy that was a great throw and a great catch. And then certainly the other one, Akwasi, fell down when he was making the break at the top end of his route, and he had a big play across the middle of the field. But I thought he was a difference in their offense without question. And he really put back-to-back games together. He, you know, like I said, the week before he had a big game, and against us he certainly did.
Can you give us an update on where things are as far as preparations for the coaching search?
Well, it's obviously ongoing. We're still talking things through and doing a lot of research. A lot of things that you certainly need to do, just like as a scout, to gather information on backgrounds and people that have worked with different coaches. There's a process in place that's been well established by the National Football League that you got to follow in terms of when you can interview coaches. And certainly if it's a coach in the playoffs, there's some parameters that are set as to when you can.
I would think, too, like just about every athletic director, that you probably have had a list of names that probably shifts from – you know, month to month, the guy goes on, guy comes off, another guy comes in here, guy gets put back. There's kind of an ongoing list, isn't there, in your that you've had of guys who you think these are good coaching candidates, and it may, I don't know how many guys are bouncing around in your head, but 10, 15, 20 at any one time, whatever it might be. And so it sounds like what you're doing now is sort of refining that list, trying to formalize it a little bit more.
That's correct. And like I said, there's a process to it, and we'll just see how it plays out down the stretch here. I mean, there's some guys who are clear choices, I think, in a lot of people's mind, whether it's a veteran coach that's been a head coach, or it's an ascending coach with experience that's ripe to become a head coach. I mean, there's different types of candidates that are certainly out there that people are looking at, and we're no different.
All right, time now to announce our Scouts Eye Unsung Player of the Game, and we will roll out right now who was the unsung player from Saturday's game in Nashville.
Well, I'm going to go with your guy. Colin Clardy. He did have 2 catches for 16 and a half yards, and the one thing I did like about him, he went out of the game. He had a little bit of a shoulder injury that occurred when he came down hard after attempting to make a catch, and then he went right back in later on special teams, and he had a heck of a tackle on the punt team. He actually had 1 solo and 1 assist. There's a few guys that certainly could have been mentioned in this category, you know, the unsung player. But I would say overall, I'd go ahead and give it to him on offense and special teams.
All right, very good. Colin Clarity is the Scouts Eye unsung player this week. We'll take time out. When we come back, we'll dip into the gene pool. We'll look at the kick returner and punt returner positions and what makes up somebody who could really be a star there. Also still to come, we'll try to unweave the playoff scenarios in the AFC, give you an idea of where it all looks, and also take a look ahead to the final game of the season, Jaguars against the Colts, and how this could impact what happens in the offseason. That's all straight ahead. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith continues right here on Jaguars Radio.
Line of scrimmage, the Jaguars' 42-yard line. Opening drive here, kept alive by a penalty. Hassel back to throw. Has time. Now it's hit, sack, and pulled down way back inside the 50-yard line. Lugier Dusable.
That's his first career sack ever.
One of the Jaguars' big defensive plays from Saturday's loss in Nashville. Welcome back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. We'll have one more show a week from today following the Jaguars season finale against the Indianapolis Colts. And fans, just text BBQ to 72239. That'll enter you for a chance to win the Sunday's game ball delivery contest. You could hand the game ball to the ref at the start of the Jaguars' final home game. All right, time now for us to jump into the gene pool as we examine the DNA that makes up a position. And this time it's actually two positions. We'll look kick returner and punt returner. And once upon a time, return specialist was kind of just one thing. That's our return guy. I think folks have realized that there are some different skills that it takes to be a kick returner and a punt returner. But I'm lumping them together as far as the size-wise, because most of these guys are in the same ballpark. And you're 5'10", 180, and fast. 4.45 as an average is what I've found. What do you have?
No, mine would be consistent with yours. Combine and NFL starters. You are right, Cole, that they're two different type of returners. A lot of players can do kick returns. Very few can do punt returns.
Difference, of course, being you have room to operate when you're a kick returner for the number of kicks you get to return now, which is down dramatically with the moving of the kickoff back up to the 35-yard line. Punt returner, though, it takes a little guts, maybe a little craziness, focus, I don't call it what you will, but what do you look for in terms of the personality or the makeup of a guy who's going to return punts?
Well, someone's got to have tremendous courage. It might be the number one courage position on your team. You got punters that can put, you know, 5-0 hang time on a punt, and you have people covering the punt that are 4-4, 4-5, 4-6, you know, coming down the field and you're the target. And so it takes tremendous courage, tremendous, ball awareness, because you have to be able to track the ball. Sometimes the ball is moving with the wind. The left-footed punter has a different spin on the ball than the right-footed punter, which they're most used to. But there's a high level of focus that you got to have, and certainly, like I said, it does start with courage, and then you got to have the hands to adjust the ball late, because it will move, you know, with wind, and certainly the sun can affect what you're seeing, and then you got a lot of people honing in on you. So there is a lot to being an elite punt returner in the NFL.
There have been some fantastic punt returners and kick returners in college. A lot of those guys don't translate to the NFL for whatever reason. What's the difference between a great college return man and a guy who can get it done on the NFL level?
Well, in college, a lot of times, because it's a hash game, you see a lot of wall returns. In the NFL, a lot of the good punt returners are middle returners. So, again, when they're catching the ball, they got to have the courage to take it to the coverage team and make a guy miss one-on-one. And the good ones close space to where they can almost smell the breath of the coverage guy, and then they make their move to where the coverage guy can't recover or, you know, tackle the returner. So you don't have to be a guy with elite speed. You'd like to have good speed and elite quickness, and then you got to have a feel instinctually as a runner with the ball in your hand. And the good punt returners, too, I think, do a good job of setting blocks in front of them. You'll see sometimes a punt returner take it one way to set the block and go the opposite way. The kick returners can be more straight line and hit creases. They don't have to have as much wiggle as a punt returner. But, again, most skill athletes can catch a kickoff. It's the punt that's the most difficult thing to do.
Has the change in the rule changed how valuable a kick returner is? The immediate thought would be, well, fewer kick returns, so not as big. He's not going to have as big an impact. But maybe just the flip is true because, you know, the teams that have somebody really making a major impact, you have fewer chances to do it. So the guy's got to be even better in order to make that difference.
Well, the kick returns this year, I mean, you're seeing a lot of people bringing out from deep in the end zone. If you have a legitimate returner, you're going to give them the green light to do that. On the kick returns, you do have double teams that can occur. So there is still some wedge-type blocking occurring. On punt returns, you don't have that. You might have guys holding up the gunners on the outside, but it's a lot of one-on-one make you miss as a punt returner. And, you know, I think it really depends on the team. If you have a good kick returner, you know, he's going to bring it out. The good punt returners certainly are a little bit more risky, but they still got to have judgment depending on where they're at on the field. And they got to have more elusiveness than a kick returner.
Some positions you can kind of scheme them into success to a certain degree. Can you scheme a return man into success?
Well, again, I think more so the kick returner myself, just because of how you can double team players at the point of attack, which is a little bit different than the punt return. And plus, the punt return has a better hang time, so they can cover it more effectively.
All right, so we wrap things up here on the Gene Pool segment, talking about who is best, who's the best you ever saw scouted, best Jaguar, best whomever. When you think of kick returners and punt returners, who comes to mind?
Well, Devin Hester is the best all time. You talk about 5 kick returns for touchdowns and 12 punts for touchdowns. Then I'll throw 2 other ones out. Deion Sanders, who everybody is aware of as a former Florida State player, he had 6 punt returns and 3 kick returns in his career. And then Brian Mitchell, a guy who did it for a long time in the NFL for the Redskins in Philadelphia, kind of a bigger returner. Mm-hmm. More strong elude than maybe quick elude like Devin Hester and Deion Sanders. But he had 13 returns for touchdowns when you're talking about punt and kick. So those are 3 of the best all time, I think.
And the thing about Mitchell that impressed me is he did it for a long period of time. There have been a lot of guys who have been excellent for 2 or 3 years, but to be able to withstand the punishment of it over the years has been tough. I think of a guy like Tamarick Vanover who had 2 or 3 years where he was just lights out, but then that was about it. Dante Hall was about as good as you. That was about it. Guys like Mitchell or Vysik Ahema, who did it for so long, it's a little different era. But to be able to hold up as a return man for so long is pretty impressive.
No question. Another guy, more so on kick returns, was Mel Gray.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was an elite kick returner.
Yep.
But, I mean, if you got a guy like this, you know, Devin Hester, he's a game changer. It's momentum, not just field position, but momentum in the game.
Still don't know why people are kicking to him at all, especially when the game's on the line. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. All right, that is the Gene Pool. We dip our toe in each and every week. Getting a lot of the similar kind of questions here on Twitter, basically about, it seems like we get these every week. Are you going to do something about the wide receiver position? You have said on a number of occasions that that's going to be one of the areas that you'll focus on during the offseason.
Yeah, and the pro free agency phase and certainly in the college draft. It is a position that you can upgrade usually year to year. It's not like some positions that there's not, you know, a lot of players year in and year out. Wide receiver typically is one where you can do well each year.
And another question here from one of our listeners, Zoltan. Which college bowl games do you plan to visit or have you visited already?
Well, this is a unique year. I can't tell you for sure that I will make any college bowl games other than the Gator Bowl.
Yeah. That's an easy travel game.
But our scouts have some games certainly canvassed. It was a time of the year for me, not just the bowl game, but the bowl practices are very good, especially in-state here. There's a lot of teams coming to Tampa, Orlando, obviously here in South Florida to practice prior to their bowl games.
Do you scout a bowl game the same way you do a regular season game? A lot of times coaches will use the time leading up to a bowl game differently based on how the season ended, how if they have a younger team or an older team, or if they're changing something. Maybe the motivation is different if they thought they were going to play for a title, then they're not, something like that. So do you have to work that into the equation?
Well, it really depends on the coaching staff, because some coaches are a little bit more relaxed during that time, so you can actually get a lot more work done. There's other ones that aren't as relaxed or are more restrictive. And so, you know, the practices at times can be excellent, but the games are the same. You know, from my standpoint, going to a live game, especially for certain positions, it's tremendous value. And so I feel like there's some great matchups. I mean, you're seeing quality opponents in most cases, and that's a real plus versus during the season when you don't always get those opportunities.
All right, we'll take time out here, come back, look at the division and the AFC playoff picture in particular. Plus, we'll look at the key matchup for the final game of the year, Jaguars and Colts, coming up on Sunday. We're back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio.
Three wide receivers. Hasselbeck takes the shotgun snap, drops to throw, turns and slings a pass. This one is intercepted. Morgan Trent's got it. He's going back the other way. He's down the sideline at the 20 and inside the 20. Okay, that caromed off a couple of guys. And somehow Trent, who was laying on the ground, ended up with the ball.
One of the big Jaguars defensive plays from Saturday. Welcome back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Become a part of Jaguars Advantage, the Jaguars fan loyalty program. With Jaguars Advantage, season ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of your favorite online retailers. For more information, go to jaguarsadvantage.com. If you go there right now, by the way, and start looking at the places you shopped already for Christmas and you missed out on, you'll realize you need to sign up for it now, and so you save the money going into next year with Jaguars Advantage. We welcome you back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. All right, before we get into talking about the Colts game, let me see if I can unravel the playoff picture for you just a little bit. In the AFC, the Patriots have the post position right now. They can clinch the top seed and home field advantage with a win over Buffalo. Okay, that's pretty cut and dry. The Ravens can clinch the second seed if they beat Cincinnati. If that happens, Pittsburgh would be the 5 seed. But if the Ravens lose, Cincinnati wins, the Steelers with a win at Cleveland would be the 2, Baltimore would be the 5, and Cincinnati with a win. If Cincinnati beats Baltimore, then Cincinnati's in as the 6th seed. So you've got a lot of action going on there in the North. The West is you got two teams playing against the other two teams who have a chance to get in. Denver will win the West and be the number 4 seed if they beat Kansas City at home in Denver. Oakland would get in if they beat San Diego and Denver loses. Does all make sense? More or less? New England's clinched. Houston is locked in as the 3 seed. Pittsburgh and Baltimore have clinched spots in, but where they are, we don't know yet. Green Bay has home field advantage. San Francisco has clinched the division. New Orleans and Detroit have both clinched playoff positions, but their slot's uncertain. Going to be interesting tonight, Atlanta and New Orleans. Drew Brees needs 305 yards to break Dan Marino's single-season yardage record, and that can go a long way to helping New Orleans in terms of trying to lock up the South. And the other thing as far as the NFC is concerned, in the NFC East, the Cowboys and Giants, this is the easiest one. Winner's in, loser goes home.
The only question is, who's going to beat Green Bay?
Well, Kansas City already did it once. They're not going to be in the playoffs. I don't think that's going to happen. If Green Bay has home field advantage, winning at Lambeau Field in January.
They do have home field
advantage. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And so winning in Lambeau Field in January, not so easy.
I know what the answer is. It's Vic Ketchman.
Vic Ketchman that's how you beat the Packers, or that's why the Packers are that good.
Yes, that's
maybe that's why they've gotten there. Any thoughts on the playoffs as we get closer?
Well, obviously Green Bay, I think, is without question the team to beat. I still like the Steelers, and I mean the team that could be the
that
one
says
this
a
year.
Lot from an Ohio boy. You'd liken the Steelers.
Yeah, I just think they know how to win in the playoffs, and defensively, I think they still are a team that can match up with people. I know early in the year people said they were getting old. They do have Roethlisberger. He has experience in the big games. Then obviously San Fran has been a team that has done some tremendous things. I think they're capable of beating, you know, anyone in the playoffs. So it'll be a great run here down the stretch for people to follow the playoffs.
All right, final game, Jaguars-Colts on Sunday. A lot of folks saying, geez, the Colts are going to lose this game on purpose. I mean, they want that first pick. And I try to explain to people that's not how players work. Players do not want to look bad on film. They do not want to lose, but they don't like losing games. Management may have other ideas in Indianapolis. I don't know, but the guys on the field, they don't care about the draft pick, the draft position. They want to go out there and win the game.
No question. You know, they know, like you said, Cole, they are being evaluated. This is their livelihood. Yeah, I think they're going to come in here and certainly give it their best. And, you know, they've had some success down the stretch here. So we got to be ready to roll, and I'm feel confident our players will be.
I had one of the listeners post something, send me a Twitter message that has the NFL draft order percentages. As of right now, the Colts have a 74% chance to get the first pick. Rams 26%, projecting records and everything else. The Vikings are technically still alive for the number one pick, but 100 things would have to happen and fall into place. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And of course, we all know about the Andrew Luck sweepstakes, as this has been going all year long. The Jaguars, by the way, can draft anywhere from as high as third to as low as seventh or eighth, and really seventh, eighth. There's not much of a chance. Again, everything would have to fall into place just right. But, you know, how it all falls out, that's where we're looking right now, somewhere between three and seven in terms of the draft in the first round.
We should get an outstanding player, and we have that position, in essence, throughout the draft. So we got a chance very early in the draft to get some guys that can come in here and make an impact next year.
All right, let's talk about the Colts game. What's the key matchup here? Typically, it's we know how – you talk about keeping Peyton Manning off the field. Peyton Manning's off the field. That's done. So what's the key matchup this time?
Well, I think, you know, our ability to handle Freeney and Mathis, and then on the flip side is our ability with our front to get pressure on the quarterback. We got to do a better job than we did against the Titans.
There are some guys who are playing on this Colts team who have been around a long time. You mentioned a couple of them, Freeney and Mathis. Those guys still playing at a high level?
They are. Both of them certainly can still rush the passer. They may not be as stout against a run. They're somewhat undersized. But in terms of creating rush off the edge, they still have some of the better skills in the league.
How about Reggie Wayne? Chance it may have been his last game in Indianapolis this past week. I think he was treating it as if it might have been, the way he was going off the field, saluting the fans and so forth. Does he still have some game left?
He does. He's a crafty receiver. He's a little like Keenan McCardell from that standpoint. You know, he's a guy with a lot of pride. I mean, he prepares really well. And although he doesn't have the elite speed, not that he even had, you know, great speed coming out of Miami, but he had good speed. He's winning now with a lot of other things that have to do with instinct and savvy.
Yeah, and playing with a number of different quarterbacks this year, so it's not like that old comfort zone they had with Peyton Manning for so many years.
No question.
All right. The other thing, of course, we'll be watching for Maurice Jones-Drew to make a chase at the rushing title. And, again, it's the last game with the Weavers as owners on the 4th. That's next week. The papers will be signed. It'll be a done deal. Between now and then, you have a birthday too, don't you? So have a happy birthday.
Thank you
Happy
very much.
New Year, and we will talk to you on this show again on Monday. Gene, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Cole. Thank you, Joe. And again, thanks to all the Jaguar fans. Happy New Year.
All right, tomorrow night, Jaguars Coaches Show at 6 o'clock. Wednesday, Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna. Until then, Cole Pepper saying thanks for listening. For Gene Smith, for Joe Fortunato, good night from Jaguar Central.